Hello, good everyone. Welcome to the Scientific Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Berry, joined by the one and only Major Daniel Shrewsbury Jr. I told you 2 weeks ago we'd be back this week in anticipation of the NFL draft. We took last week off to allow ourselves to, well, watch the draft because it would be kind of inauthentic for us to talk about the thing as it was happening. So we did, and I speak for myself only when I said, well, I can't speak for Darren, although I'm pretty sure he will agree that it was fun, it was interesting, and it looked like Bill Belichick was having fun, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I wanted to get your overall thoughts on the draft as a whole, not necessarily like team specific, but just what did you think of the draft? And it was in Detroit. They looked like they broke the draft attendance record with like a day to go. They were into it. It looked like this is what a draft should be. I've said this many times. The NFL draft is the greatest celebration of the game of football ever because it goes from peewee, high school, college, all up to the realization of a dream of being an NFL player. It's more than the Super Bowl. I think Detroit killed it with this celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I remember something, the numbers were something like 750,000 people cumulatively or something like that. Wild. And you can tell it certainly was a culmination of a bunch of things, right? I mean, the excitement of Detroit having some sort of relevance in the league again, I'm sure had to have some sort of effect on that, and as well as just the general full one way or another, just hype around what was in this, supposedly, you know, in this draft. And what they put on, they had a lot. I like that they had so many different coverage teams that were just there, right? You had so many other options to watch. As such, I chose to watch Pat McAfee for the time I did watch. And it's always fun seeing the guest announcer, pick announcers as they roll into the second day. So that's always cool.
I apologize for technical difficulties. I'm wearing a new watch today, and I have Bluetooth on because it's next to my phone. For some reason, even though I have headphones on, watch just said, screw it, it's going to go through your phone. So while you were making that point, Darren, it just completely cut off. I had to cut off Bluetooth. Not a big deal, but a minor inconvenience, sure. But while I figured out, because I can figure everything else out, but I can't figure out how to turn that off. I don't know. It's very weird. Anyway, I'm assuming you are making some world-changing point that could solve world peace.
I wish.
Me too. Me too. But in absence of you repeating yourself again, we will go on to the Patriots. It was a very unusual draft for us Patriots fans. We were done by like 9. And we're not used to that. Granted, we like the reason we weren't used to that.
Yeah.
But it was still weird. They took Drake May, the quarterback out of North Carolina, in an early run of quarterbacks that shocked absolutely no one. And we'll get to that in just a second. But what do you think of the new Patriot signal caller?
Initially, my initial reaction was, listen, I knew this was going to happen. But to quote my friend's common use of this phrase that he commonly uses, my exact words were, thanks, I hate it. And that was because of my innate distrust in the team to address the other needs, right? The Patriots that we know prior to this were not a team that drafted to draft their needs. They drafted basically who was best on the board, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. In fact, there's 20 plus years of data to suggest why that was a good thing. But my point still stands. It's like, especially the last few years, you get worried. It's like, you know what you need. Where the hell is it? So And I still stand by, I don't believe a quarterback was the main problem. But I'm also of the, I have also relinquished the point of, well, it's a new regime in the coaching staff, so maybe they just want their own guy. That's fine. That's, you know, what it is. But my real point for not initially liking it was that, well, you've got a guy who isn't a bad quarterback. There's like, by no means do I have anything against him as a player. But the problem comes with what's surrounding him. The things that he did not, or that threw him into turmoil, especially last season at UNC, was that he was forced out of the pocket more than he would like. He's not extremely comfortable having to get out of the pocket and make plays on a fly like that. Which means that was an offensive line problem. And then when he was forced to get out of the pocket, or even if he wasn't, his receiving core didn't help him out enough to get the separation he needs, to get, you know, a route run ran well, things of that sort. He was still able to make some plays, but the places that he was faltering, I stared at this and I was like, well, what is the biggest problem the Patriots have had for the last 2 years at minimum? Exactly that. So you're effectively drafting a guy into his worst case scenario. So that after day one, I was like, I don't dislike him. I have nothing against him, but I don't trust the system around him to help him succeed. Now, part of that, a lot of that was lifted a little bit through the next phases of the draft, where we saw an exact paradigm, a 100% paradigm shift to drafting what they needed. They needed tackles. They needed guards. They needed receivers. They got every one of them. And a tight end to boot. Like, in fact, their entire draft is quarterback, wide receiver, tackle, guard, receiver, cornerback, another quarterback, and a tight end.
So what you're telling me is they needed an offense and they found an offense.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
On top of the weapons that they decided to keep, which is where all that money from the Brinks truck went, and some to the defense. So, initially, thanks, I hate it. Thanks because, hey, there's nothing inherently bad about his skill. He is perfectly capable, and he's a solid quarterback. I hate it because this what the system's going to do to him, or what I fear the system will do to him. But the I hate it part pulled away a little bit towards the end. I'm still a little skeptical, but as I always say, you're a Patriot now, let's fucking go.
I hate it because I've said this on this show to you in private, just I did not believe they needed a waste of pick on a quarterback. In no way did I believe they needed to go out and waste. Like, this is almost as big a waste as what most people think Michael Penix will be to the Atlanta Falcons. You didn't need a quarterback. Jacoby Brissett has proven himself time and time again capable of running the NFL offense and winning games. And Bailey Zappe, my God, the kid took a bad team and made the offense look like it actually had potential in the last year. Sure, it ain't Billy O'Brien, it ain't Belichick, it ain't whatever, but the kid can play. Mm-hmm. I really don't know why you didn't just go, okay, we've got Zappe for another year on the rookie contract. He's the guy. I would love – now, granted, Mayo will never say this. And if he did, Kraft would probably stick up and like, we don't do that here. Just no, protect him because he loves him for some reason. But you'll never get him to explain why they did this. And I would very much like to see their information as to why they chose to do this because I believe I'm owed evidence. I didn't see any indicate that Bailey Zappe should not be the quarterback of the New England Patriots week one. I did. But they drafted another quarterback, so he's done. Mm-hmm. And I wish, like, I seriously would not be disappointed if he goes to the New York Jets and beats the Patriots twice. Like, this is what you get. This is what you get for making a moronic decision. you drafted a fixer-upper project quarterback in Drake May, the least polished of any of the quarterbacks taken in the first round. And that's the one you chose to go with? Granted, okay, he played in a good college system. The college systems are going in the NFL at a more rapid rate than ever before. That's fine. I've got nothing against him personally, but I just don't know why they're doing this. I really don't. Jacoby Brissett's probably going to be the starter week one. That's great. I got nothing against Jacoby. You like Jacoby, but you already had your option there. And I know some people are going to say, well, Lucas, you need to stop dwelling on the past. You believe Belichick should still be the head coach, and he's clearly not. So just get on the fucking bandwagon, why don't you? Well, guess what? No, I'm mad at how this team is run. I'm bad from the top down. Kraft made a bogus decision. He let his inner fans took place, and it's showing in the way the team drafted. I'm not happy with the direction of the New England Patriots overall. I'm not. They took a lot of talented kids, and I hope they all succeed. But I'm sorry, but I, as a fan who openly discussed the potential of jumping ship and going to the team, you're not doing that much to make me want to stay and root for you. You're not. And it doesn't help that Bill came out and basically called Drake May the worst quarterback in the first round.
Yeah.
So, who knows? I guess we'll find out when they win. I guess we'll find out week one.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out week one. Speaking of week one, let's look ahead. We don't know the schedule yet, but we will get there. Are you? Do you have more confidence in the 2024 Patriots now than you did prior to the draft?
Marginally, but it also is influenced by the fact that they locked up Bowmore as well, which, yeah, I think they, one of the important things of this team was locking up as many of the veterans as you could that made an impact, and I think they managed to do that. So getting these guys in, I mean, you've got some receivers that really can that really have the potential to slide into it, that number one receiver slot, right? You've got Polk from Washington, and who was second, if I recall properly, he was number two behind Adunze in that wide receiver room, and he slipped the boards. And then you got Baker from UCF, and I could be mixing them up in terms of their skill set, but I believe Baker is the one that can make really good contested throws, and Polk can run the routes real well. Getting that mixed up, but point is, you've got a guy that can run routes well, exceptionally well, and you've got a guy who can make contested catches, and that's very nice. It's nice to have.
And you got a guy with a great quote said he makes people in wheelchairs stand up.
Yeah, I think that was Baker. I think Baker said that.
I think it was, yeah.
Like
that's then, a lot of talk coming from a guy from UCF.
Yeah. So, at least in having a couple weapons, extra weapons, and potential number one weapons, that immediately makes me feel good. And I didn't see anything about their the free agency pickups, like the undrafted guys. I think they picked up a safety from the undrafteds. I don't remember who that was, but I think they did. So marginally, because obviously these are all rookies and it's hard to tell, but the fact that there were clear skills that were missing from the previous iteration of this team gives me a little more to look forward to.
I agree. And I was talking to my dad about this around the draft last week. We were talking about the state of the Patriots in comparison to the rest of the league. And I said, well, the years of the Patriots being able to outsmart people and win are over. And I don't mean that to be a knock on Jerod Mayo. I don't have anything against Jerod Mayo as a coach or a person, okay? I just don't think he should be in this role right now. I think the way Belichick was forced out was wrong. But I'm not saying that Jerod Mayo is a bad coach. I'm not saying he won't be good. I'm not even saying he won't be great. But you have to have talent now. And the Patriots, we've said this before, Coach Bill covered up a lot of what GM Bill got wrong. And you're right. Seeing players that actually fill positions of need is good. I bring this up because I was talking about, we were going by division. We were going to the AFC. It's like, okay, the Dolphins are supposed to be pretty good. The Jets, we suppose, are going to get better. They've been drafting really well as of late. The Bills lost a lot of talent, but they've still got Josh Allen, and Sean McDermott's still a pretty good coach. The AFC East is going to be the AFC East might be the toughest division in football. It really might, along with the AFC North. Like, the AFC as a whole is loaded, because you got the AFC North will always be a bloodbath. The AFC East, we figure the Patriots could probably be a little bit better. My God, it can't get that much worse. Yeah. So, the AFC East should be a bloodbath. The AFC South has the Colts, the Titans who loaded up, and the Texans coming off of C.J. Stroud's great year, and the Jaguars should be better. The two-time defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs are in the AFC West with the Denver Broncos, who you think would be better under Sean Payton in year two, even with the rookie quarterback Jim Harbaugh is out in the Chargers, and then you've got the Raiders, God bless them. So it's like, well, the AFC is loaded. You're going to have talent. But at the same time, you've got a bunch of kids out there, and that's what's concerning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one thing I'm also hoping to see is I'm hoping that Gonzalez, when he rolls back into the rotation, that I hope that the injury isn't affecting him long-term as, you know, I guess it could, right? Because, I mean, he was lights out for that first month. He was shutting down absolute number one receivers with little effort, it seemed. I mean, a rookie was doing this. And then, of course, we can't have nice things. You get rookie of the month and then you get injured because you can't have nice things. But I am excited to see him back out there too.
Me too, and that's going to, that you said it. That's going to be a really interesting thing to see how the injury affected him, because if he's on, that's a lockdown corner. You've got that sorted. And again, that's something that you really can't see in preseason and camp. You guys kind of have to line up and go. Because here's the thing: I believe this as my own personal belief is that yes, I can sit there and I can go through the motions in a training camp or whatever, but I don't really get a feel until the game counts. And it matters if I get burned for an 85-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
We'll switch now to a more broad point of view. We'll go through a few of the picks in the first round. Not a ton, but just enough to get kind of a sampling of things called a smorgasbord of NFL draft talk. We'll start with the broad look at the first round, and that is, what did you think? Like, what did it go the way you thought it would, or were you completely turned on your head?
I think just about, I mean, obviously for the in-depth overall, all 30 people, most of the people, I'm like, I don't recognize your names, but that's because I'm not as learned in the realm of all the college football people. But for what I paid attention to, it kind of seemed to fall right in the hands of just about every culmination of every mock draft that comes out for what any of them are worth, next to zero. So I was like, okay, cool. Literally zero people. I mean, in fact, there might have been -5 people that were surprised that Caleb Williams was drafted number one. And then, of course, Daniels, May, Harrison, that was all, that was top four regardless. I think both of us were just hoping it was Harrison Jr. at 3 instead of 4. the Adunze going at 9 to the Bears to get the Williams Adunze combo. It's a slap in the face. I'm like, damn it, because we could have had Adunze too. But JJ McCarthy and Bo Nix, pretty much how many? We had five or six quarterbacks? Six.
Let's see. Williams, Daniels, May, Penix, Nix, and then JJ McCarthy. So yeah, six.
Yeah, in the top 12. Like Nix went 12, and then after that it was a lot of defensive guys. I mean, there was and wide receivers pretty much. I mean, literally, there wasn't a defensive guy until Latu to the Colts at 15. There were some people that were actually wouldn't have been surprised if a defensive guy wasn't drafted at all in the first round because of how apparently loaded the offensive side was. But the real surprise was Atlanta sitting on going, hey, we just paid a guy $100 million guaranteed and $180 million contract. Let's draft a guy at number 8 and then probably sit him for 5 years because the owner or GM or whatever literally said, yeah, he could sit for 5 years. Brother, you're sitting him for his entire rookie contract. What do you expect to get out of
it? Not only that, but he's actually an older kid anyway. Like, he would be in his – he would be like 27, 27, 28. That's a career killer.
Mm-hmm. And again, nothing like literally not a thing against Penix whatsoever. I would have taken him. But he's got like 3 injuries across major injuries across his career, if I recall properly.
Didn't he blow his ACL in Indiana?
Yeah, didn't he blow it again immediately after? I think he actually had blown his ACL in the same leg twice, if I remember.
Yeah.
If not him, some quarterback.
They need to look at the Falcons' medical team because they cleared Kirk Cousins coming off of an injury. And then this? Atlanta's got great health care. Why don't the Falcons have great doctors?
Yeah. And the funnier thing is that they apparently tampered to get Kirk Cousins.
I forgot about that. You're right.
This all just screams, what the hell is going on? And again, like, in terms of him being a player, nothing wrong with it. But there was effectively zero damn reason for you to pick him at number 8.
I found the explanation, Darren. I found the explanation. This is the same organization that passed on Bill Belichick for Raheem Morris.
Yeah, yep, you know, you're right.
Nothing against Raheem Morris. He's been a head coach in this league before. I'm sure he'll do good. Notice I didn't say great. But you had a chance to hire the greatest coach this sport has ever known, and you chose Raheem Morris.
Yeah. But let's talk about a guy who's getting thrown into a ridiculously good situation in terms of weapons. McCarthy. He got handed a fucking silver platter. This dude's coming in with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, God knows who else. Who's their running back?
Addison.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, shit.
With an offensive-minded head coach.
Yeah. It's like this dude's set up immediately.
they pointed out something that I thought they were kind of overblowing it at first, honestly. But I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, that's actually a really good point. But you could have done it less. Mm-hmm. And that is that they handed off like 32 times in a row with Michigan against Penn State. He's not afraid to turn the hand of the ball off. He doesn't have to throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns to feel good about himself.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, yes, it is a great trait. It is the Vikings. It's NFC North. We get it. But can we hush about that for 5 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also right.
And then you got Buffalo down here going, you know we need wide receivers, but we're just going to trade a pick. And then what does that pick – who does that go to and what does it tone into? Kansas City and the fastest damn receiver the draft has ever guy the draft has ever seen.
They literally they got the second incarnation of Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, it's like, my guy. Buffalo, do you want to win the AFC at any point? Like, it's like, no. You don't want to win the NFC. Because I'm thinking you don't want to win the NFC. Do you? I don't really think so.
Did they just switch conferences? Did you just break news? You said NFC twice.
Oh, I said AFC. It just must have sounded weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe my hearing's going for all I know.
Because I'm like, wait a minute. But the way I said it did sound weird, didn't it?
A little bit. I was like, wait, did we just pull a Schefter? Did we just break news even though we have no intention of doing that?
And then they come back and did they trade twice? Or I can't remember, they didn't trade.
Oh, so there were so many trades.
Because there were talks about them trading 33, but I don't think they ended up trading 33.
I don't think they did.
Maybe they did and went back to 35. I've got it right in front of my. No, never that. They got Keon Coleman at 33. Never mind.
Okay.
But there were talks that they'd be interested in it. And then the Pats had what, 34, and then they trade back to 37.
Sounds right.
Because Los Angeles ended up getting McConkey, which I would have taken him too, to be honest. Yeah, they did like a quick trade, and then everyone else decided to trade. Yeah, let's see. All right, there were no trade. There were actually, yeah, that's right.
Three straight picks traded: 33, 34, and 35.
In round
the Patriots
one,
traded back in 37.
In round one, we had pick 10, pick 11, and pick 17. 23, 24, 27, 28, 29. So that's what? 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 picks that were involved in a trade in round one. And then round two, it might as well, the whole damn thing might as well been, the whole first half might as well been. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 45, 46, 47. 50, 52, 52. It was just all over the place. And then guys are trading picks and then trading the pick they traded and then trading it again. Like, I saw, literally, there was so many notifications that came across my my phone. It was, I opened it up, I'm like, trade, trade, trade. Like, what the hell?
Uh-huh. It was wild. So he literally was like, I don't want this pick. Do you want it? I'll take it. I don't want it. Someone else take this pick, please.
It's scrolling through all this randomness. I land on round three. Eagles picked up an edge guy from Houston Christian.
Houston Christian? What in the hell?
Where is that? I mean, Houston. where is that?
Spoiler alert, it's actually in Dallas.
Actually, it's Houston, Idaho.
Oh, God. he's used to be playing in cold weather then, eh?
It wouldn't be funny if it was someone not actually Houston, but I'm going to look it up anyway just because.
Jalix Hunt is the kid's name. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, sir.
Yeah. Houston Christian University, formerly Houston Baptist University.
I didn't know they changed. And it's news to me.
Yeah.
How about Yale? Yale has a second round draft pick.
Huh.
Kieran I'm not even going to try.
That really makes me wonder, though. It's like, I'll scroll. Let me see if I can. You said Yale? A second round?
Yes. Yeah. Third round. Pick 75.
75, 75, 75. Kieran Amagaji, maybe?
That's what I was thinking. Amagaji.
So it makes me wonder that, like, obviously I'm not going to go into some hypotheticals and philosophicals about any types of religion, but it really makes me wonder, it's like, what's the fundamental difference between a Baptist and Christian, and what made the university go, you know what, we just don't all go vibe.
Honestly, I kind of wonder. Well, we had something like that happen at Wheeling Jesuit University, where it's no longer that. It's just Wheeling University. the Jesuits pulled out. So it kind of makes me wonder if, like, whatever Baptist convention was going to was doing that, maybe they pulled funding and they had to go find something else.
Yeah.
And that's our homework for next week, to try to find out that answer.
Yeah.
Let's get back on track. Let's talk about the number one overall pick, Caleb Williams. We all knew it was coming. No one in their right mind thought literally any of the pick was going to happen. The overwhelming sense I got, at least from you and I, is thank God it's over. We can move on to something else. But at the same time, we can't talk about Williams without talking about Romo Odunze. That I come to rail on the Bears because they have proven once again that they absolutely disrespected Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. And any talk that suggests they didn't is wrong. Having said that, what do we think about this whole situation in Chicago?
I mean, Odunze, great. I don't know. Maybe I'm just media bunt out of just seeing everyone ride his dick. But I just don't understand what's that special about Caleb Williams. I really don't. What is it that they – like, I'm not saying he's bad. I do not intend to say he's bad because I don't think that. But I truly do not understand what the hype is about him and why he's so great and is going to be is going to be so fantastic. Is exactly what Chicago needed that you didn't already basically have in Justin Fields to begin with. Like, what am I missing here? I know I'm missing things, but what am I missing?
I've long thought the same thing. Like, there's nothing I heard in any analysts saying anything that actually proved to me that the Bears needed to take him, yeah, and he was going to be the savior of the franchise.
It's like other than the fact that he's a rookie and is younger, like,
and you get that many more years of cheap quarterback play. Like, what if he doesn't work out? You're going to trade him, and you're going to go through the same cycle again in 3 years?
Yeah, it's like the thing that doesn't make any sense. It's like, again, when Justin Fields was on the field, he didn't ever particularly play poorly. The team played poorly around him, but he made some moves. Like, he did some things that kept the team in contention in some of the games, and damn well won some of them that they otherwise wouldn't have. I mean, we even saw that when he was gone for what? Was it a month? A little more than
something
a month,
like
that? Well, they didn't know what they already didn't know what they were doing, but they even more so didn't know what they were doing. And when he came back on the field, it was like, all right, cool. We have at least somewhat of a shot. And I'm still never been that high on Justin Fields. But I knew, and I could see with my eyes, and I'm blind, effectively, that he made a difference on that team. And all you had to do was give him a couple weapons, and you guys will.
Justin Fields, with the weapons that, with the guys that they picked up, if you keep Caleb Williams, and you spend that pick on Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe still Romo Odunze, maybe, maybe an offensive tackle. If you put Justin Fields with these weapons, that team makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd say so. And, like, the thing that really gets me in general with the draft order and who's number one and all that is that most of the time I'm at the point where I really do believe that it's not it's almost to the point of me believing that it's not even the coach or the GM or even the owner's decision. It's whatever the media fucking wills it to be. If the media just decides to keep writing about it, then it's got to happen, right? They're manifesting their own destiny. And it just seems like they were talking about him being a number one pick 3 fucking years ago, I feel like. And they wouldn't shut up about it. And boom. Again, you've got a team who didn't even need to spend the pick on him, picking him. Because they got rid of the guy that was just fine beforehand.
To that point, and this is something I just thought about, when's the last time an offensive lineman was taken number one overall? It used to be commonplace when you and I were growing up, but I don't think it's happened in quite some time.
See, an offensive lineman?
Yeah. Like, it used to be, oh, we'll take a tackle or we'll do this, but it's been all quarterbacks recently.
Yeah, and with the exception of a couple edge guys, but I don't know. Let's do a Google.
Okay.
Non-draft QBs drafted number one in modern era. Well, this is a power ranking. I don't need a power ranking, but I'll read through the list and see what they got. Jadeveon Clowney in 2014. I'm just going to scroll down this list in the order of their power ranking. So there are going to be some in the 70s, I'm sure. Walt Podolsky, defensive end in 72. Eric Fisher, offensive tackle in 13. So there's a recent offensive guy, I guess, about 10 years ago. But Steve Emptman, 92. Audrey Bruce, linebacker, 88.
I found the list you wanted.
Yeah. 2013 is so far what I'm seeing.
Trayvon Walker was a defensive end in 2022 from Georgia. And then specifically offensive lineman, it was Eric Fisher in 2013.
All right.
Jadeveon Clowney in 2014 is defensive end. Miles Garrett. Other than that, it's been quarterbacks.
Jake Long in 2008.
My God, Dolphins. Jake Long.
Bo Jackson.
To your point, it does kind of – I mean, I'm not – you're not a conspiracy theorist, and I'm not. But it's an interesting point you raise in that what's the most glamorous, easy-to-sell position ever? Quarterback, right? Just look at your high school, right? They don't say the cheerleaders dating the offensive line. They say the cheerleaders dating the quarterback.
Yeah.
So – it almost does kind of feel like, hey, pick some kid who has talent, don't get me wrong, but he's great. And we think he's great. Just make him the number one overall pick. It really does kind of feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I hate going there, but it's true.
I mean, the same shit was said about Trevor Lawrence and other things like that. It's like they pretty much give them a 2-year window and they just start manifesting it to be number one. Even if it's to a team that doesn't actually need it. In this case, like the Jaguars basically needed the quarterback, but it always seems to just be manifesting. Like, oh yeah, it doesn't matter who's number one. Who's the number one pick? Who's got the number one pick? This guy's definitely number one. It's like, but is he though? Like, is he the best player in the draft?
Speaking of the best player in the draft, it was not Jaden Daniels, but he went number two to the Commanders. He shouldn't have won the Heisman Trophy last year. That should have been Michael Penix's trophy, and I will die on that hill.
Yeah.
Underwhelmed, overwhelmed, or just about him to the Commanders?
I mean, it's hard to say, oh, yeah, he's the answer. Because, well, they've had about 20 other answers in the last 10 years. So
the closest one to an actual answer is playing for the Falcons right now.
Yeah. And I would say I would even go as far as to say that if had Alex Smith not suffered the leg injury, he could have been an answer. He could have rode them out for at least a couple years to get them to allow them to get somebody to study behind him. Right. That would have been a perfect scenario for them at that point. Whenever he started there, I was like, oh yeah, they're getting a solid guy. We already knew what he could do. We'd already seen him do it everywhere else he had been. So I was like, well, shit. So it's hard. He's at least some sort of an upgrade to Sam Howell, but at the same time, it's like you threw out Taylor Heinicke because Sam Howell was apparently the guy because, oh, I saw him at practice and I regret not having starting him the year before. And well, the guy who made that decision's been already out of here, so what does it really matter? Sam Howell's also not there. he's gone. They traded him away because they were like, ah, shit, this guy was not didn't know what he was talking about. Which, to be fair, I don't really think previous coach man did really know what he was talking about, because I stand by Taylor Heinicke should have just still been the starter there. I mean, shit, they threw 21 interceptions to the team, so anybody's an upgrade there. But again, it's immediately, oh, shit, you've got the guy. This is the franchise quarterback there. And I'm like, can we – I'd like to petition as a whole, as a fan base, and as a and as the media, and to can we just bury the franchise quarterback phrase? Can we bury that, please?
Hell no. And here's why. Because if I don't put out 5 million articles, 18,000 podcasts, and 15 million verbal uses of the phrase just in general, you won't watch my shit. That's why.
See, I already don't want to watch your shit if you're saying it.
Yes, but I have a better chance of you clicking on that damn thing if I say the words franchise quarterback.
But as an actual seriousness, you're literally not wrong. There are no lies in the words you have spoken. But I'm absolutely sick and tired of hearing it, because every single person knows it's bullshit. Jane Daniels is not going to be the franchise quarterback. I guarantee you he'll be gone in 3 years, because this franchise is so damn ridiculous that they don't know what they're doing. Now, I hope the ownership changes and is actually in some new mindset, but I will believe it when I see it. Like you said, Caleb Williams, he's one win shy of where they want. He's out the door in a few years. Like, in an era that is very clearly proving itself to not give a shit about the quarterback, that they have wasted their time, picks and effort grabbing, to then just chuck them by the wayside immediately. We've literally seen it in the last few years. Mac Jones's draft class right there is a perfect example of just literally no one gives a shit. They seem to, and the media hypes it up, and then when it comes to fruition, they're thrown by the wayside. They are the problem, right? They are the only problem, when it's clearly the organization. So the franchise quarterback means fucking nothing.
You get 2 years in this league now.
Effectively. Yeah.
That's wrong. That is wholly wrong.
They have a running back in this league.
Yeah.
As a quarterback.
They're slowly bleeding the answer. There are going to be fruit flies that live longer than and what you have as an NFL starting quarterback.
Yeah.
They're slowly getting there. That's sad, but it's true.
For the position that is so highly valued, it is ridiculous. Like, we throw running backs under the bus for wanting $25,000 more than usual. I mean people paying them, the owners and coaches, but a quarterback sneezes and they give him $3 million. Like, but it's just ridiculous.
It is, and for that kind of money, it's like, you've put how much effort into this? Let's just forget about the actual contract. Let's look at the effort in scouting, the effort in promoting. All this stuff, like, you put a lot of money in these guys.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you at least want to try to get a return on investment?
Yeah. I mean, we've literally, I mean, whatever agent works for some of these people, right, they deserve, I don't know, a Hall of Fame ballot immediately, I guess, but perfect example being Kirk Cousins in this case, of that this guy has made, what, nearly $500 million from this league? At this
something
point,
like it's
like $400 million from this league in contracts and guaranteed money and all this. And what does the guy have to show for it? 4 playoff appearances and 1 victory.
And he can't win a game that isn't started at 1 p.m.
Yeah. It's like, he'll get you some way, but he ain't getting you all the way. And that's a proof. I mean, maybe Atlanta somehow, maybe Atlanta saw that with afterwards. They're like, shit, we just gave him the contract. Fuck, we messed up. Damn. How do we reconcile this? Yeah. I can see it now. They're like, damn it, what did we just do? We got a 35-year-old who we're paying him $100 million. He's got one playoff win under his belt.
Yeah. And there's that kid in Washington that we thought looked kind of good. You know what? You're right. Well, you know, Kirk just went on that Braves game and talked about how much unity there is in the organization. Boy, he's going to get proved wrong. I'm sorry, yeah. But but we have to do it.
We'll add in, since you mentioned the unity, we'll quickly add in the fact that the agent said, oh, yeah, the team didn't contact us about this. Fuck you. Well, whoever it was, who was it that said they didn't contact him about Coke about this pick? Was it his agent?
I think it was.
Yeah.
It almost had to be because he didn't say it.
Yeah. It's like, my guy, you're an agent. If you want to make the picks, apply for the position with the staff, right? Like, you're under no obligation. You got your $100 million fucking dollars. Shut up.
We're going to make this more than a passing argument because, well, I like this conversation because I get to rail on organizations and leadership and tell them how I'm smarter than all of them combined, which I believe now that Belichick's out of the league, with the exception being Andy Reid. I'm not smarter than Andy Reid, but I'm smarter than most people. I'm smarter than the average football fan. That's a Yogi Bear reference if you haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, I was about to say, we're smarter than the average bear.
If by bear, average bear, you mean the Bears GM, then sure. Here's the thing. I don't get why fans are yelling and screaming about, oh, they should have told him. He's under contract. We need to stop this whole mindset of, like, it's not a partnership. It is, quite frankly, ownership. Your contract is tied to the Atlanta Falcons. They own your ass, quite literally. They don't have to tell you anything. If they do, it is only because of basic human decency that they chose to do something out of the goodness of their hearts. Your job is to show up and do your job regardless of who else is there. If they brought Tom Brady out of retirement, if they brought Otto Graham back from the dead and placed him under center, guess what? You still have an obligation to fulfill your contract and show up and go to work every day.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Especially when you're a guy getting paid $100 million to do so. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
To you, Kirk Cousins is sitting there going, sweet. Hell yeah. Whatever. Give me the money. That very well easily could, or very well could be the easiest $100 million he's ever made.
Yeah.
Penix comes in, outclasses him, takes QB1. This is all hypothetical and it probably isn't going to happen, but it's still possible. That's what training camp's for. That's what preseason's for. Outclasses him. Cousins rides the bench. He's like, whatever, I got my $100 million, let's go.
Like the Falcons are contractually, like, they will pay him $100 million minimum.
Yeah.
There is, quite literally, no negotiating out of that. That money is guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. You might as well write the check right now and say, all right, we're done. Like,
you can go take it in the bank tomorrow.
Yeah.
I really hate that, and I blame the NBA for this, because in the NBA, you know, the players run the league, and it's like, well, you know, you have to run it by LeBron before you trade me one. Like, no, I don't. LeBron has an obligation to come in here and go to work every single day, just like Kirk Cousins does.
Yeah.
If I want to trade anyone else in this roster, I don't have to clear it by him. He can be mad all he wants. He can sit out all he wants, but guess what? His contract still says tied to the Los Angeles Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice that teams want to tell run something by a player, and I'm sure as star players you'd like to know what's going on. Yeah. But there is no obligation for the team to tell you anything except when to be in training camp and when to show up for the season. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And we keep talking about changing players, changing teams, and all that, and all that. And we need to mention that when these players take the field, it could look different next year because they've been approved to wear the practice helmet shells. The specific name of these things escapes me at this time. But essentially, it could look like practice out there instead of playing an NFL, instead of playing in a regular season game. What you think, sir?
I mean, this is it's weird in that. Listen, I understand the I always understand the quote unquote player safety, right? But you and I both know the NFL don't give two shits about that. The thing that gets me, and this is superficial, but also I feel like is integral to the league, as weird as it sounds, is that we like uniforms, right? Like the uniform design is in essence a key part of the game. If that makes any sense whatsoever, like we like to sit here and shit on bad uniforms. All the time. New York Jets. All the time. But we also like to appreciate the ones that exist. And
Patriots red.
Exactly. And the helmets are almost always focal points on all that. If you sat there and had a soft padding, these soft shell helmets, on the West Virginia Mountaineers helmets, people would riot. Because those damn things are iconic at this point, especially the throwback ones and now the Country Roads ones that exist. But I get it. This is all I know. Everything I'm saying is superficial and is effectively meaningless when it comes to that. When the key is supposedly player safety, but I say all of this knowing full damn well the NFL's push for player safety is a load of horseshit.
I've said it on this show before. The NFL is concerned is not player safety. It's the appearance of player safety to the mom who watches the Today Show and only sees the NFL being portrayed in a bad light. It has to convince her to let her son play youth football, let her son play high school football, let her son play college football, etc. That's what the NFL is really concerned about because it does come down to survival of the league. The league is making a boatload of money, but guess what? If the players' stream dries up, league goes under, and it knows that.
Yeah, and like the stuff that I see is, I mean, the NFL gathers data like crazy, especially when they're partnered with the Amazon services, and we see all the weird data points that they show. The data says that, and they've mandated these at practices for at least part of the teams for what, 2 years now, two seasons, and other than that, everyone else is optional. And also to point that these are optional for players if in like when they play in the game. But supposedly the data shows that you have up to a 20% reduction in force distributed to the helmet across the helmet or absorbed. Sorry, 20%. Up to 20% of the force is absorbed if both the players are wearing those caps when they're, you know, colliding. And they claim that there's been a 7-year low in concussions during training camps, which is all good, right? If that's true, that's great. I don't necessarily doubt it. But it's very interesting. It's a very interesting, it's a back and forth thing. It's like, yeah, I'll just make the obvious joke here. Is Patrick Mahomes' helmet not large enough? The man's already a fucking bobblehead out there.
Oh God, he went there. He went there.
A lot of the things that I see and people that complain about it, and they're like, oh, well, why the hell do they need that when they can put the padding on the inside, blah, blah, blah. And I haven't looked into the validity of this, but the claims are that it's not the padding on the inside that's the problem. It's the fact that the hard shell on the outside tends to cause more problems and apparently isn't absorbing enough or distributing enough or whatever. And I get it. Like it's the same thing you think about with cars. People are like, there's always the misconception that the 1970s cars were safer because they're so damn heavy. Yeah, but when they smacked into you, all that force went straight into the person, and you were probably dead if you got into an accident. Nowadays, you can effectively get into a 90-mile-an-hour crash, and your car crumples to bits, but you survive because of that crumple. Like, the literal engineered crumple zones in cars that distribute that force such that by the time it gets to you, you are hopefully surviving. And in a much greater frequency than what would have in the 70s, 80s, and such.
Let's use a not great comparison, but still in the realm of cars. NASCAR. What happened after Dale Earnhardt died? They added the safer barrier to most tracks. In fact, all tracks. What is that? It's a barrier that is supposed to be not like a fucking brick wall or concrete wall. It's got barriers in it that give. It's still hard, but it gives now. We have ways to absorb the hit.
Exactly. So I am all for engineering safety. I'm all for that. But it just feels like there's, as again, superficial as it sounds, a more attractive way to engineer that. Maybe this is just a step. And again, this is optional. Like, players have the option to. We could very well see not a damn one of them do it. We could see all of them. And I don't want to, I'm not sitting here saying a player should or should not. But I will be lying if I say it won't look fucking weird with one of them out there. I mean, it looks weird when didn't they have them on at the spring game?
I believe so.
Imagining that.
I know you're right.
It's like that looked weird, but I fully have the understanding of what it's meant for.
Baseball tried something like this with pitchers' hats several years ago, and it was basically they tried two things. They tried a big ass fucking hat.
Is that where the meme hats are now? Like those $100
essentially, yes. Essentially, yes.
I have to find photos of the evidence of this now.
And then they tried one where it was like you could put a protective thing around, like on the brim of the hat that you're wearing. And of course, it had the team's logo on it, but it looked weird. And there was one guy from the Padres who wore it, and I'm like, he's the only guy I ever remember actually doing it. No one in the Braves did it. Thank God. But it's like, my God, this looks weird. This is fucking weird.
It literally looks like you put a cheat code on in an ML or like a Nintendo 64 game.
You found it?
Yeah. I have to imagine this. Alex, there's one with Alex Torres. The Safer Isoblocks hat? I mean, you probably don't know the name of what they were, but because I see one where they have like a protective cap, and then I see one where they're basically wearing a Luigi hat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's effectively what they're wearing. That's hilarious. Again, perfectly understand it. Pitchers get beamed when those things, if they're just a millisecond too slow.
Oh God, the guy played for the Braves. But I don't remember that. What the hell? I must dig into this kid's career now. Continue.
But that's just hilarious looking. I can't imagine anything, the pitcher or the player wearing it feels anything less than stupid wearing it. Even if they chose to wear it, they're probably still like, I look like an absolute moron out here. What is going on?
Yeah.
That is, I wish I could rewind just to watch a game with everyone wearing one of these. This is great.
See, here's the thing. To kind of bring this all together, because this is the show we got off into 15 million tangents, and we almost sound like we're Pat McAfee over here going and starting a conversation and continuing over here. And J.J. Watts, you know, oh my God, here's A.J. Hawk. But here's the thing. What you said to begin with about how the helmets is not wrong. Just like a baseball hat is the team's identifier, the helmet is the identifier. The helmet is what makes football football. It ain't the pads. It ain't the jersey. It's the helmet. When you have a matchup T-shirt, what's made? The clashing helmets, right? Mm-hmm. It ain't jerseys. It ain't West Virginia's jersey and Pitt's jersey. No, it's West Virginia's helmet and Pitt's helmet. Helmets are a thing. So you're right. It's taking that bit of free marketing, essentially, because you're watching the game and you're seeing this and covering it up. And that's weird. But at the same time, the NFL doesn't really have much of an option because it has to continue its facade of, we care about player safety. What we don't say, what they don't tell you, is the really tiny, tiny subtitle of, so long as we can keep players coming into the league. All right. Are you ready for another tangent?
Sure.
Did you see, I say this knowing full well I showed you. Did you see what David Tepper's up to?
Yes.
Why? Why?
Entitled rich billionaire asshole who thinks consequences or he can evade consequences because he's a rich entitled asshole?
Yeah. It's like, dude, it just... I don't know what he said to the guy. But it's like, you shouldn't be making a trip out there, and you most certainly shouldn't be touching another man's property in the middle of this conversation. Like, I'm sorry, but if you touch me or anything on my person without receiving permission prior, problem. Don't touch me.
Yeah. I just I'm not gonna say whether it's justified or not, or you know, that people would not have consequences one way or the other, but you touch my hat, I'd have punched you in the face. I don't care how much money you got. Yeah, I'm decking you in the face. Because you have now laid hands on me. And I'm decking you.
That was what the prevailing comments were.
People are like, oh, whatever, blah, blah, that's a reaction. He's got law. I don't give a shit. Punch him in the face. Like, I bet there were a million people that would love to punch Elon Musk in the face. Just because you're a billionaire, just because you own a team, just because you own something, doesn't mean you could just do what you want.
There are people who...
The United States government tends to believe that, apparently. But you should be punched in the face for being an asshole.
Could you imagine a line of people on the line would be people who want to punch Elon Musk? It'd be the longest line in recorded history.
Yeah.
I don't like David Tepper. I made that opinion very well known on this podcast. I will not elaborate further. I will not give him the time of day anymore until he pisses me off again. But I will move on to what we learned this week. I actually had something I had learned. I forgot about it. I'm going to try to find it again while you enlighten us on something that I guarantee you has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about.
I'm trying to find what it was. I'm pretty sure. Oh, there it is. I don't know too much detail other than it was a cool photo to see. I might have sent it, and if I didn't, I will rectify that soon. But the James Webb Space Telescope, our favorite new telescope, released some more photos and one of them, or a group of them, happened to be of one of the more iconic bodies that we know of, the Horsehead Nebula. And more specifically, we saw, or they showed photos of the mane, so to speak, of the nebula. And it just looks really cool. Simple as that. It's extremely cool. And they just show different aspects of body that we just hadn't seen. And it's just sick. So if you haven't seen it, I will show you. But they took it with what they call a neo. The telescope has what's called a neo infrared camera, and I don't know anything else other than that. It's just neo infrared, and they use that to take like really close up portions of the nebula to just get more detail outside of the broad photo that we're all familiar with.
I don't believe you showed me that picture before, so I think you have to rectify that.
I think it was like barely a week ago that I saw.
I had seen a million things over the course of a week that I didn't know that. That's interesting, but I never write it down. I should, but I don't. But 2 weeks ago, right before our last show, I bought a book called Timetable Treasury. It is schedules, consists, advertisements, and menus of famous and forgotten trains in North America from the 1920s through the 1970s. And it's rather appropriate I am going from this book today because today is 53 years since the formation of Amtrak on May 1st, 1971. When the government created railroad, took over from passenger trains from the private railroads who were hemorrhaging money from passenger operation. But that's not what I come to talk about. Come to talk about this 1935 menu from the Northern Pacific. Here are some selections for luncheon and dinner. This is the special plate luncheon and dinner. Roast entree or fish, including potatoes and one green vegetable, served on a large plate family style with bread and butter, coffee, tea, or milk. In 1935, guess how much that cost?
1935. Okay, repeat that list.
It was roast, entree or fish, including potatoes, and one green vegetable, served on a large plate, family style, bread and butter with coffee, tea, or milk.
1935. $1.50.
50 cents.
Damn.
Chef's special plate luncheon and dinner. Consommé or thick soup. Chef's suggestion or meat, fish if desired. Potatoes and one green vegetable. Large plate, family style. Bread and butter, ice cream and cake or pie with coffee, tea, or milk. How much?
Well, knowing the other one was 50 cents, do I think that's more or less? Ask 60 cents.
75 cents. The chef, the table d'hote dinner. Hearts of celery, burr gherkins, seafood cocktail, consommé, pearl onion, chicken okra creole, which sounds really good. Let's see here. Salmon steak, sirloin dinner steak with mousseline sauce or Great Northern sauce, which I really must know what that contained. Roast young lamb, mint jelly, spring chicken saute, baked sweet potato, hot tea biscuits, fresh green vegetables, pineapple and endive salad, French dressing, Old English, Roquefort, or Leander... Later France cheese or crunch cheese, toasted crackers or Rye Crisp, ice cream, baked apples, homemade cake with cream, tea, coffee, or milk. For $1.25, you can have all that. Not all, but you have the selection of that. And what I learned is, my God, I wish I had a time machine.
Right.
I could be real good for what I got in my wallet. Sure, the train took like 2 or 3 days to get out there, but at those prices, I don't even care. Who cares? Mm-hmm. The ticket was probably less than $5. Well, maybe. Either way, I was flipping through that book the other day, and I was like, damn, that caught me off guard. I knew it was cheap. I didn't realize it was that cheap.
Yeah.
Then again, $1.25 in 1935 was actually a good bit of money.
Yeah.
Hold on. We are going to do some figuring. How much is that today? How much how much is a $1.25 in 1935 today?
I feel like I'm going on the low end, but I'm gonna say 35.
Let's see here. It's $27.75.
Hmm.
Which honestly is not as bad as I thought. But that's still, I mean, that's, you're paying $30 for a meal.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, for one person, that's not exactly normal. Now I know why railroads want, the freight railroads were like, get me the hell out of this passenger business. Yeah. There's actually an old CNO advertisement video from like 1933 where they go, the Chesapeake in Ohio does not make any money on food. There's no way it could possibly do so. But we're not selling food. We're selling transportation. And I'm like, yeah, because if you really did try to sell food, you wouldn't have been a fucking railroad. Anyway, that's what I learned. I was so shocked that this book is like 180 pages long, and there's very little written word. It's just timetables and advertisements and consists and menus. It tells you what you're looking at on the page, and it gives you some context. You have no idea what you're looking at if you've never heard some of these things before, but it's basically a written history of American passenger rail for about 50 years. And I'm glad I got it. I didn't even know about it. I came across knowing about this book in the weirdest of ways. I was scrolling through Facebook one night and I came across an ad for a website from some model railroading group. And I was like, oh, I'll look at this website and see. It was like a used model train website. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. I'll take a look at it. And it had the book section. I'm like, well, let's just see what we got in here. And I found this book. And I was like, that looks interesting. But can I get it for cheaper? Turns out I could. Mm-hmm. I found it on Amazon. And I was like, well, okay then. I'm getting this. And I'm really glad I did, because there were some things I had heard of, some trains I'd heard about, but didn't really have a whole lot of information about. So it's really kind of cool for me to see, like, just – If I showed it to you, you'd have nothing. You'd be like you showing me a thing in molecular biology. Like, it's going to be Greek to me. But I understand this, and it's really an interesting insight into what American passenger railroading looked like, because I only know of Amtrak. I mean, I was born in 1996. Amtrak was a full 25 years before me. So, you know, that's all you and I've ever known. I know of the other railroads doing it, but I don't actually have never seen a CNO or a chassis system passenger train, or a CSX passenger train, for that matter, that it wasn't full of executives.
Yeah.
All right, that's our show. God knows what episode this is. So we're just going to say so long until next week. Darren, we're getting close to the end of the season, aren't we?
Just about.
About time for us to play the schedule game one more time, and then we'll be done. School will be out for the summer, as they say.
Yep.
And we'll cross that bridge when we get there. So, thank you so much for listening, everyone. Darren, take us home.
Adios, everybody.